All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate at Google in Switzerland. And part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around their website and web search. And as always, lots of questions were submitted already. And it looks like a bunch of you already have your hands raised. So maybe we'll just go through some of the people who raised their hands first, and then we can go through some of the submitted questions. Let's see. Anas, I think you're first.
Hi, John. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
So basically, my question about something popular on the internet when we are doing some research about SEO, about the end of domain name. Oh, I'm not talking about .us or .uk. No, I'm talking about like .net, .com, .club. So most people on the internet saying .com is better for SEO. But I can't see that is logically. Is that right?
I don't think that's right. So we generally don't differentiate between the different generic top-level domains. We mostly differentiate between country code top-level domains and generic ones for geo-targeting. But within the generic ones, like pick whatever you want, whatever is available to you.
OK, I have another small question. About when I am learning SEO, so I start with bad SEO. I writing bad articles. So after I am writing good articles, should I remove old articles? Is that will affect my website on all, or I should keep it?
I think if it's something that you think is good content that you want to publish with your website with your name, then I would keep it. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's bad. But if you look at it and you say, oh, this is embarrassing for me now. I don't want it to be online. It's like so bad. Then that's something where I'd say like either improve it or remove it.
OK, thank you a lot.
Let's see, Ahmed.
Hi, John. I'm Ahmed from Turkey. I'm an SEO analyst at Webjust Digital Marketing Agency. And my question is, on a multilingual website, when we use our target language in our URLs, there can be some symbols and numbers instead of letters in some languages because they are not supported. So my question is that affect SEO? Because some websites use this URL structure, and some of them use only English in their URLs, even though the content on the page is another language. So what's the correct usage of this?
Yeah. It generally doesn't affect SEO. So for the most part, we don't care that much about the characters and the words in the URL. So it's something that I would primarily do for users. And users might care if, for example, something is in English, but the actual content is in Turkish or in French or whatever. So that's something where I would focus on the user aspect rather than the SEO aspect. From a search point of view, we can deal with any URL that is valid, essentially. But from a user point of view, some types of URLs are just a little bit more confusing than others. One thing that stands out, for example, is if you have spaces in URLs. Technically, you can put spaces in URLs, but it makes it a lot harder for people to copy and paste and to recognize where the URL starts and where it stops. So that's something where, from an SEO point of view, it's fine. But from a user point of view, it's confusing. And with regards to different language content, I think if you can localize the part of the URL with that kind of refers to your content, I think that makes sense from a user point of view because it gives them a little bit more the feeling that this is actually content for me and not just content in English. But from an SEO point of view, I don't think it matters.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Saidul.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I have a question. So one question is, we have a client, he has e-commerce site, and they have a blog. Now, we have noticed they have a lot of blog posts, old blog posts, which are not doing well on Google search results. Like they are not getting any organic clicks at all for a long time. So we have decided to remove those blog posts. Now, the problem is we used those blog posts for to interlinking to other product page. And if we remove those blog posts, that means those products will lose some interlinking. Will it affect the organic ranking of the product?
Maybe. I mean, if these are blog posts that don't get a lot of visibility anyway, where search engines don't treat them with a lot of respect, essentially, then those links are not going to matter anyway. On the other hand, if these are blog posts that are very visible in search, then of course, if you delete them, then that visibility that's kind of forwarded to the other parts of your site, that would get lost.
Okay. And the second thing is about a website. We changed the domain name for the website in April. Now, when we check on Google Search Console, it is still showing that Google is moving the old domain to new domain. So it's OK. So when you search on Google using the old domain name, it looks like there are a lot of old domain name URL are still available on Google Search. Now, my question is, if someone clicks on the old domain name on Google Search Result and come to the new domain through 301 redirection, will Google consider this as organic traffic or referral traffic?
From a search point of view, I don't think we care. I think probably where you might see a difference is in Google Analytics. But that's more with regards to how Google Analytics tracks how people come to your site. And that's not something that we would use for search.
OK. Because what we see that after changing the domain name, the organic traffic dropped a lot compared to the previous month. So we don't know actually whether how it is being tracked, whether it is organic or referral. So a little bit confused. That is why I'm asking this question.
Yeah. To double check, I would look into Search Console and the performance report. And there you can also look at the performance report of the old domain to see are lots of people going to the old domain URLs or not.
OK. No worries. Thank you.
Sure. Ashwani.
Yeah. Hi, John. Hi, everybody. Hi. Very good morning. John, actually, I have a couple of questions related to international targeting and multilingual targeting.
OK.
So my first question is, if suppose I have a website.com website and I am from India and now I wanted to promote that website in Brazil, okay, so I use /br directory, okay, for Brazil. So now my question is, should I translate my complete website, or if I only want to I only want to promote 5 or 10 products there in Brazil? So my question is, do I need to translate my complete website, or only 4 or 5 pages we need to just translate and put it on the subdirectory? Just this question.
Totally up to you. You can translate as much as you want. You can translate as little as you want. So there is no requirement to have the whole website localized.
OK. And the second thing is, if suppose I am adding something in Portuguese language inside our subdirectory website, but I'm not adding those content in a parent website, like .com website. So does it affect any SEO?
That's also fine. The main thing to keep in mind is that if someone is searching for that specific content that you have in just one language, it can happen that that one language page shows up. So for example, if you have a specific product in Portuguese that you offer in Portuguese but not in English, and if someone in English searches for that product name, then we can still show the Portuguese page. So it's not a guarantee that you would only see that content, but essentially we would focus on that for indexing.
OK. And do I need to create a sitemap for those directories? Or submit it in the Search Console?
You don't need to. I think it's a good practice because it makes it easier for you to track in Search Console, though.
Okay. Understood. And one more thing: if suppose I have an English content, like Indian content, okay, but in US there is a US American English and there is a British English, okay, and I wanted to target my English content in US, in UK. So do I need to convert all those Indian English content into like American English or British English, or do I only target, like do I just implement location targeting, just simply?
I would try to localize things as much as possible. So on the one hand, there is the SEO aspect. On the other hand, there is the aspect of what happens when people go to your website. Just for the sake of like actually getting something out of the SEO side, I would make sure that it's localized properly. So writing in the right form of English or the right form of language. It's similar also with Spanish content, Mexican and South American countries. It's something where, on the one hand, you can appear in the search results, but if people go to your website and they realize, oh, this is not actually content for me, then they will just go away again.
Okay, listen. Thank you, John. But John, one more question. It is different from multilingual and multi-targeting. The simple question is, if suppose I am changing my content, somehow changing the content of the website or content of any product page, and earlier I was interlinking those product, we have created two or three interlinking and two and three external linking. Can we change internal linking or external linking in future if we update any blog or any content or any product page content?
Sure.
Do it affect SEO?
We do use internal linking to understand how the pages fit in within your website, but you can change that. That's very normal that sites restructure over time and change the way that they link internally.
Okay. Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Sure.
John, I have one follow-up on this same question.
Let me go through some of the submitted people first, and then we can have more discussion later on. Thanks. Cody.
Thank you, John. I have the franchise versus local websites problem as far as the strategy. What percent, is there a percent threshold for the difference of the different pages when they're covering the same topic? So that way they're not cross-firing against each other, diluting the result.
Yeah, there's no specific percentage. From our point of view, we try to look at the actual content on the page and try to figure out how that matches the query.
Right.
So that's kind of the main aspect there. And that's something which you could probably, I don't know, look into a little bit more in detail when you look at the queries in Search Console, where you see what people are actually using to search for your website. And then looking at the results there to kind of figure out, for this one specific query, do I have multiple pages that are being shown? And could having multiple pages being shown be a disadvantage in that particular case?
So for the local websites, if I have one in Austin, I have one in Florida, if someone's looking for something in Florida, I shouldn't worry about Austin's result hurting Florida.
Yeah.
Cool. The other thing is to, is there any way to get Google to understand that the independent local franchises and the corporate website are on the same team, so that way they support each other in domain authority?
Not okay. Like in with a meta tag or anything like that. So usually we try to figure out which parts of a website belong together and do that algorithmically, but it's not something that you can specify.
Okay. And then how would you optimize the following, or how would you prioritize the following? Would you optimize current content that's for SEO, or would you worry more about creating new content that is SEO optimized?
I think it depends quite a bit on the audience and the kind of content that you have there. If people are searching for something new, then I would definitely prioritize newer content.
Okay.
But it really depends. And it's also something that can change over time. So we sometimes see that with topics that make it into the news for whatever reason, then suddenly for a period of time, we try to show newer content. And then, I don't know, a month or so later, then everything settles down, we show the older content again.
Okay, so if you were a service provider providing a utility service, like, you know, working on something in someone's house, like general construction, mm-hmm. would you say that current content is more important because it's not so much time sensitive, it's more evergreen?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
But I mean, it's also something where if you're active on the website, you have the opportunity to kind of jump into current topics as well. So if, I don't know, an ice storm comes or a heat wave comes or something like that, providing some content specific around that gives you a little bit more flexibility to be shown for those queries as well as for kind of the standard ones.
I appreciate that. And one last thing, how would you structure linking between the corporate website and the independent local websites? Is there any best practices there?
I think you can mostly do that just organically. I don't think you need to do anything specific. One thing I might watch out for there is if you have a really large number of individual websites that are kind of tied into the main corporate website, then it might make sense to do something like, I don't know, like a map page or a listing page where you kind of provide all of those individual sites. If it's a smaller number, say, I don't know, less than 10 or something like that, then that's something you could just do in the footer of your website as well and just kind of cross-link them like that.
Okay. We have a drop-down like selection process at the moment, so that way you can say or type in, okay, well, I live here type thing. So yeah. I just didn't want to worry about, I know that there are some people that do the spammy link building, and I don't want to get manual actions against because we have like 30 different franchise websites. So
yeah, I think with the drop-down approach, that sounds okay. The one thing I would watch out for is that it's actually crawlable, that we can find those links.
Okay.
So that's something where if you use the Inspect URL tool in Search Console, just kind of make sure that they're actual links going to those pages, not that it's pure JavaScript where it does kind of like a search thing and then shows the results and then guides you there. Because if it's really kind of this pure JavaScript search setup, then Googlebot wouldn't be able to spot that.
OK. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate all that.
Sure. Olaf.
Hi, John. It's me again. Again, we get problems with soft 404 errors and URL deindexation. I put my question also in on the comment. In several e-commerce projects, we got since two to three weeks, we got again increasing soft 404 errors, depending on the product detail pages and category pages. For the category pages, we think that thin content is the reason for soft 04, but for the product detail pages, we cannot identify a pattern. Did Google change something in the soft 404 detection?
Probably. I mean, it sounds like it. I think especially with soft 404, one of the kind of approaches we've been taking is to try to automatically learn what is a soft 404 page. Yeah. And I could imagine that in some situations, that leads to situations where we have to kind of like pass something back on to the team so that they can adjust the systems that they have there. So if you can, yeah, if you can send me some examples, that would be really helpful. I can't guarantee that they'll be able to tune it and make it work for that or that it's specifically on our side. But these I think, are always useful to have.
We see that especially the product pages, they will go away from the index, but they will come back. And then it's switching all the time. Where could I put the to the email address I sent you last time my examples? Yeah.
Yeah. If you already sent them to me, maybe you can just send a follow-up email so that it pops up in my inbox again, and then I can pass that on.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Cool. Thanks. Sagar. Swati is first. Sorry.
Hey, John. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Hi. So I have a question for the client. So we are using an agency analytics tools. So in that, what happens is, like, you know, when we crawl it, it appears lots of errors, duplication content errors, and the errors is fixed with, like, you know, archives, tags, and categories. So these things are causing, like, you know, duplicate content error. So what is the best approach to fix it?
How do you see the duplicate content error?
So usually, like, you know, blocks, for example, blocks is, like, you know, main header menu and followed by the certain URL. So the same content, a block and uncategorized, and again followed by a URL. So this is, like, you know, creating a duplicate content issue.
And how do you see that it's a duplicate content issue?
Because according to the Google, it is under the URL, it is having the same content, like, you know, list of the blocks. It has listed so many blocks under the same URL.
Okay. My feeling is this probably isn't really a problem on the website. So probably you don't need to do anything special there. It's pretty common, for example, to have category pages where if you list the full blog post, then of course that will be the full content of the blog post as well. If you list a snippet of the blog post, then that makes it a little bit different. But essentially, it's something where sometimes you just have a chunk of the same content on multiple pages. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I do think for category pages in general, though, using a snippet of the blog post instead of the full blog post usually makes sense, because then people go to the actual blog post for the full information. But even the snippet that you show will be the same as a part of the full blog post. So it's there's always a little bit of overlap, but that shouldn't be a problem in search.
Actually, what we have done over here, like, you know, a block followed by a tag followed by a URL. So when it is creating an issue, so probably we have made it as a tags and a category as an deindexation. So because that's the one practice we have followed, and that will, like, you know, filter out the errors over there in the tool. So might be that works. Other question is, John, regarding crawl errors in Search Console. So thing is here, in the coverage issue, when we checked it, there was, like, you know, so many URLs has been excluded. So when I check the excluded section, so many URLs has been crawled but not indexed. Again, on check of a particular URL in the inspection tools, it shows that recently it has been crawled and indexed. So when I do a cache colon by the same URL, it shows the same URL has been crawled in the month of April. But in the Search Console, it shows it has been crawled recently. But again, in the error, it shows it has been crawled and not indexed. So what is the best approach to fix this? Because it lists, like, almost like 800 URLs, which has been crawled and not indexed. But on check in the same Search Console, it shows that it has been crawled recently and indexed. Why is that?
I don't know. It would be interesting to look at some examples. So if you can send me some, or maybe post them in one of the comments, then I can take a look.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the one thing that is kind of expected is when you look at the cache page that you see something slightly different, like a different date or something like that.
Right.
Because the cache page is not representative of what we use for indexing. It's essentially a kind of like a parallel system, which is updated in its kind of own time. And then you often see situations where maybe the cache page has a different date, or the cache page is not there, but the page is indexed. And that kind of mismatch is kind of normal. So I wouldn't use the cache page for diagnosing. But if you're looking in Search Console and you see in one report it says it's indexed, and the other one it says it's not indexed, then that seems like something that we should be able to fix.
Yeah, like if it has been crawled and indexed, it is only showing last week it has been crawled and indexed. But I think it should not show in the coverage section it has been excluded, right? It should show in the valid section. But I don't know why it is showing in the excluded section.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be useful to look at specific details. I mean, one thing also to keep in mind is we just don't index everything that we crawl. And it's pretty normal for pretty much every website that there is a large number of URLs that are crawled and not indexed. But the mismatch, I think, is something that we can probably try to figure out.
All right. Thank you, John.
Sure. Sagar, now you.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, John. I have a question. I am getting an error in my Search Console. In the AMP section, the error is error in required structured data element. But when I'm checking in a tool that is Google Rich Results Test, it is showing that everything is fine. So is this a glitch?
I don't know. It might also just be that there is a kind of like a timing difference in that the report in Search Console is based on aggregate data and older data as well. And if there was an error with the markup at some point, or if we couldn't crawl the page properly to get the full markup that way, then we might show that in Search Console. But if you check the live page, then it might look OK. One thing I would do there is to look at the errors that you see in Search Console and sort them by date, and look at some of the newer ones and just double check those. Because with the newer ones, the time difference will be lower, and it should be more similar to what you actually see. Also, if you regularly see these kind of errors in Search Console, and when you check them, it looks OK, then that sounds like maybe something on your server is not functioning smoothly, in that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work.
OK. Thanks a lot, John. Thank you.
Sure. Let me run through some of the submitted questions, and then we can get back to more live questions as well. And I also have a bit more time afterwards if any of you want to ask even more questions. Let's see. Starting here, we believe our domain has a domain legacy penalty. So it goes into a lot of details. And essentially, they moved to this domain in 2019 and have seen a gradual decrease in rankings over time. So I double-checked the domain. I didn't see anything that was essentially holding it back. And usually, if there's a manual action associated with the domain, you would also see that in Search Console. So those are kind of like the two things to kind of say. First off, the other thing is, if you moved the site in 2019, you've seen a gradual decrease since 2019. That's a pretty long time. And that doesn't sound like something which would be similar to any kind of a manual action associated to a domain. Because over a couple of years, it's pretty normal that you see kind of these gradual changes in search visibility over time. And that doesn't mean that it's like tied to any manual action or anything kind of manual associated with that. I see in the question, it also goes into, like, in 2009, there were spammy links or spammy content back there, but we cleaned that up. I think looking into the history of a domain before moving makes sense. But if you've already committed and you moved in 2019, that I don't think any of that would be playing a role there, especially if you've been seeing kind of this gradual decline in visibility. If when you move to a new domain and everything is completely terrible and nothing is visible, then that seems like something where maybe you need to figure out what is actually up with this new domain. But if you move and over a couple of years things change, then that's more like normal organic changes in search. So I don't see anything specific that would need to be addressed from a search point of view there. It seems more like something where over time, like finding ways to improve the website and improving it over time is kind of what you need to be looking into. Then a question about crawling and indexing speed. So we had a number of changes to our site, and then Google crawled everything as quickly as possible. And we fixed those issues, and now Google is not crawling as quickly as possible. essentially. And it also has the same question of crawled but not indexed in there as well. So I think looking at the crawl rate is definitely something that makes sense here. So I took a quick look at the website, and I do see that there is like a significant drop in the crawl rate over, I don't know, a month or so that I looked at there. And usually that's something that's tied either to kind of strong technical issues or strong quality kind of issues. So if you look at the crawl budget blog post that we did a couple of years back, we essentially have two aspects with regards to the crawl rate. On the one hand, the crawl capacity, how much we can crawl from a server. On the other hand, the crawl demand, how much we want to crawl from a server. And the crawl demand is kind of one thing that you can affect with regards to the quality of your website, with regards to how you set up internal linking, URL structures, all of that. But the crawl capacity is usually something more tied to the technical aspects of the server, which includes things like how quickly does the server respond to requests, and do we see a lot of errors coming back from the server? And that's probably the easier thing to resolve, because it's more a matter of just getting more server resources to make everything faster. So in this case, I would first look into improving kind of the crawl capacity, how to make sure that your server is as fast as possible. In Search Console, there are the crawl stats reports where you can look into your current status. So I would check into that. Especially watch out for errors and watch out for the speed, the average response time. For the average response time for a larger website, I would aim somewhere below, I don't know, 300 milliseconds, something like that. The important part here, maybe worth mentioning, is the response time is not the same as the loading time when you're looking at a page in something like PageSpeed Insights, but rather it's the response time the server has for individual requests. And having something, I don't know, under 200-300 milliseconds, make sure that we can crawl fairly efficiently and pick up as much content as possible. And when you're sure that the technical aspects are correct, then I would double check kind of the internal linking, making sure that the URLs that are being crawled are actually ones that you care about, all of those kinds of things. With regards to crawled but not indexed, like I mentioned, we don't index all pages that we crawl. So just speeding up crawling doesn't necessarily mean speeding up indexing. It is something where you can also help us with kind of improving the quality of your website overall, where if our systems think that this is an important website to show in the search results to as many people as possible, then we will try to index more content from the website. Whereas if our systems are unsure how to treat this website or unsure about the relevance of the website, then that's something where maybe they'll crawl a lot of things and say, well, maybe we don't actually need to have it indexed. So those are kind of the aspects I would watch out for there. Then always an interesting question about accented characters. Do accented characters in a brand name make a difference when it comes to ranking SEO? I've tested, and the results are slightly different. Is it a matter of matching, or is it more the typical behavior of the searchers that kind of comes into play there? I think it's a matter of both. So on the one hand, we do match words as much as possible. So if someone searches for a spelling or a kind of a way of writing one word and we find that on the web, then that's easy for us to match. That's easy for every search engine to match. On the other hand, we also try to recognize essentially alternate spellings, alternate ways of writing words, and treat them as synonyms as much as possible. It's not that we have kind of this binary notion of it's a synonym or not, but rather that we say it's pretty close, or it's kind of a rough guess in that direction. And based on this automatic synonym detection systems, essentially, that we have, we generally also pick up on things like accented characters or kind of different ways of writing specific names. The other thing that also falls into that is essentially our spelling correction system, where we try to recognize typos and misspellings and also adjust that. And in practice, all of this comes together and essentially means that for a large part, these kinds of search results will be very similar, but they won't necessarily be exactly the same. So it's kind of matching what you have there. And I guess the overarching question is like which of these words should we optimize for? And from my point of view, or from a search point of view, we would generally recommend focusing on the correct version of the word, because that's kind of the long-term version and the correct version. But if the correct version is not really the commonly used version, then it's not problematic to also include the commonly used version as well. So with regards to accents or no accents, if typing the accent is something that like fewer people do over time, then maybe including the word without the accent also makes sense. But I would not shift to the kind of the popular version of the word unless you really want to rebrand your site and your business as well. Because essentially, what we try to do with, especially when you're talking about brand names, product names, things like that, we want to be able to recognize what is actually the official page for this product. And if you rename your product, even by changing things like the accented characters or not, then that's something that our systems first have to figure out and understand better. Whereas if you just include the alternate version of that name in your information for the website, then it's a lot easier for us to say, well, these kind of belong together, and it's a confirmation for us that actually it is more like a synonym or an alternate way of writing that word. I wonder if that was understandable. If not, I'm sure we'll get that question again next week. If I post multiple posts on a blog for similar content targeting different users, does that affect SEO? Let's say I post best jobs in India, one article, and then best jobs in Canada. So some of the content will be matching. Does this have any effect on the SEO of the posts? A little bit. So this is kind of similar to, I think, one of the earlier questions today with regards to content that's shared across multiple locations, in the sense that when someone is searching for that common piece of content that you use in multiple places on your website, then usually we'll just pick one of your pages and show that in the search results. And that might be perfectly fine. So for example, if you have one page about jobs in India and one about jobs in Canada, and the same job type is listed on both of these pages, if someone just searches for that job type, we'll pick one of those pages and show it to the user. Whereas if the content were kind of unique across these pages, then that's something where we would essentially be able to always show these individual pages separately. So that's, I think, just something worth keeping in mind there. If you're sharing content across multiple pages on your website, then you can't necessarily control which of those pages are shown. In the search results, we'll try to pick the appropriate one. For the most part, I don't think it matters, because if you have a page specific about jobs in India, then someone will be searching more for those specific elements of that page rather than for a generic, like, I need a job kind of query. So that's probably something that would be fine. With SEO being sort of new territory for us, I wanted to ask the following questions. How relevant are meta tags for the optimization of search engine results for a website? Meta tags. So there are lots of things that kind of fall into the category of meta tags. And I think some of them are super relevant and super important, and some of them probably less so. What I would focus on when it comes to meta tags is the ones that are actually visible directly in the search results, especially if you're just thinking about SEO. So there are other reasons to also have meta tags as well, of course, outside of search. But specifically for search, I would focus on the ones that are visible in the search results. So that would be the title. The title is not technically a meta tag, but it kind of falls into that category. The title of a page is very important for us because that's what we use as a basis to show as a title in the search results. It's also something that we use for ranking as well, kind of the information in the title. So title is really important. The description meta tag is something that we show as, or we can show as a snippet in the search results. We don't use the description meta tag for ranking, but it's, since it's something that can be shown to users in search, I think it's super important to include that on your pages to make sure that you're providing something that matches what the page is about and kind of describes it in a reasonable way. So those are kind of the two main ones that I can think about at the moment. Then there's all of the kind of structured data elements, which also kind of fall into the meta tag rough area. Technically, they're not meta tags, which might also be worth looking into. And let me see. And then there's the robots meta tags, which are also kind of important when it comes to search, but mostly important when it comes to not being visible in search. So the robots meta tags, with those, you can tell us, don't index this page, or don't show this page in the cached version, or don't show a snippet for this page. All of these things are elements that you can tell us in a robots meta tag. If you want your pages to be visible completely in search, then you don't need to use a robots meta tag. I think those are the main ones. We also have a Help Center page on meta tags that Google knows about that has like all of the details as well, because there are lots of kind of like small things as well that kind of fall into that category. And then how do I structure proper and suitable meta descriptions? I don't know, a big topic. We have a little bit of a Help Center article on writing good titles and descriptions. I would definitely check that out. The main thing I would watch out for with descriptions and titles is that you write something that is natural, that it's something where if you pick up the phone and someone calls you and asks what your business is about, that you could read that to them with a straight face rather than kind of like having a jumble of keywords that you're just trying to tell them. So that's kind of the main thing I would watch out for with titles and descriptions.
John, I would have a suggestion on titles and descriptions. Sure. As it was the topic. You know, there's a difference in the SERPs between mobile and desktop. So wouldn't it be good to add meta title mobile and meta description mobile to give web developers a better possibility to have influence on the SERPs, on the SERP snippets?
Sometimes I think that would be a good idea, but it's at the same time, I also see that even just with one meta title and one description, or one title and one meta description, it's something that people struggle with getting those done well. So it's like, it would be nice to have more control or more options there, but at the same time, the broader mass of people, they can't even get the basic kind of one version set up working well. So I don't want to overburden everyone with something that is relevant just to a small number of people. It is something that we've sometimes looked at as well to see, like, would it make sense to allow people to do this, or could we pick that up if a page has different content depending on the user agent, that we would automatically pick that up? I think so far it's mostly been kind of like it hasn't shown that it's worth the effort to actually do something separate like that. And the other thing is that, at least me personally, I try to push back as much as possible on any kinds of new meta tags and kind of control attributes that people should add to their pages, because it's already quite complicated to deal with all of the existing control mechanisms. And it's something where it's very easy to kind of create a new meta tag and say, oh, we will create this for this one new feature that we have. And then 5 years later, like nobody is using that feature anymore at Google, and we remove it. But we have to tell people like they should also remove it, or we don't use it anymore. And then suddenly everyone is upset again that Google keeps changing its mind. Because it just, when we add new features like that to pages, we just see that it takes 2, 3, 4 years for kind of the ecosystem to catch up and start using those features. And that's also kind of the time when Google sometimes just loses interest, or when the world kind of goes into a different direction with regards to how they use the web. And it's something where when we add new features, we have to make sure that they're relevant for the long term. Now, I don't know. It's something where I also think that it would be really nice to have some kind of advanced mode where you can say, well, I know what I'm doing. I would like to use all of these bleeding edge features. Even if they go away next week, I want to play around and see what they do. But that's, yeah, I don't know, tricky. Cool. Let me see. We can go through some of the raised hands as well. Anand, I think you're next.
Thank you so much, John. Thanks for choosing me. I have a small question. When we check some cache version of the website by using cache colon website URL in the browser, so it is showing us the 404 error. But when we check the same URL, the inspect same URL in the search console, so it is showing that there is no error. It's working fine. Like it is crawling and it is indexing. So should we ignore this?
Yes. The cache version of the page is not necessarily the same as what we use for indexing. And if the cache version doesn't exist or has a different date, I would just ignore that.
And it is not affecting at all the rankings and the search, anything.
Exactly, yes.
Thank you so much, John. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Let's see, Moby, I think. Oh, OK, let me see. I think it's in the chat. For a couple of months, starting from April, our website traffic from Google has dropped 5 to 6 times and still going down. The worst thing is we are constantly doing improvements, getting better UX, better content, offsite presence. How to identify the source of the massive problems that's bringing us down? I don't know. It's hard to say without looking more into the website. I also don't know offhand like when some of the bigger changes happened with regards to search, like the last core updates. I don't know if we had anything around April. If there is something kind of that aligns from Google side that we announced back then I would definitely look into that. If you're just generally seeing kind of reduction in traffic since a couple of months, then I would still look into the overall quality of the website. And I think kind of what you mentioned there in the question with regards to we've been working on improving things, it's important also to keep in mind that these kind of improvements take quite a long time to be reflected in the search results. So that's not something where you would see, or you probably wouldn't see changes since April if you've made significant UI usability changes on your website during that time. So that's something where, I don't know, if you've made changes since April, then I would try to give it a lot longer to kind of get settled down. But also, if you've made changes earlier and it's kind of like, well, you've been working on your website the whole time, and then since April, things have gotten worse, I would still try to double check what you've been working on and try to get some independent opinions on what you should be focusing on with regards to your website. So one of the things that I always found useful when we did it at Google is to do kind of I forgot what it's called. Like when you invite users over and you kind of present them with your website, and you ask them for their feedback kind of thing. And in particular, in some of the core update blog posts, I think that we did, we included a bunch of questions that you could ask your users or that you could ask yourself about your website. And asking users those kind of tough questions and trying to take the answers that they give you in an objective way often leads you to finding things that you should be working on that might not be what you're currently working on. So that's kind of the approach that I would take there. Try to get actual feedback from people and try to take action based on that. Because sometimes if you've been working on a website for so long, it's like it's your baby, and you know which parts are good, and you kind of like you're very protective when someone comes to you and says it's ugly or like the colors are bad or something like that. But sometimes that's what you need to hear, and sometimes those small differences do play a role in regards to how people perceive your website, for example. So if for example you have something that is on a a financial topic, and people come to you and say, well, your information is OK, but it's presented in a way that looks very amateurish, then that could reflect how kind of your website is perceived, and in the long run, could reflect something that is visible in search as well. Let's see, Niraj.
Hi, John.
Hi.
So, John, actually, one follow-up I had about the language that the question came a few minutes back. So I just wanted to understand, I also see that sometimes it happens if the query is another language and Google may show different language content. And recently also, there was some discussion in podcast by Gary also, who mentioned that there is something like query expansion and related kind of content weightage. Does Google also follow for the same for here also? So if it is thinking that this is related content, the related content might be down and original content might be up. So suppose my query is in English, or in Spanish, and English content is more rather than Spanish content, then the chances are that English content will appear, but if there is a Spanish content, it will get more weightage, hence it will come first. If there is no Spanish content, then English content will appear.
Yeah, that can happen. I mean, that's I think in search, always the balance between the different relevance factors, and if we don't have anything that is more relevant in one language, then we will kind of defer to other versions as well. For example, if we give, I don't know, the language a certain weight, and we give the relevance of the content a certain weight, then maybe we try to focus more on the content. But if we don't have that content, then that lower weight of the language change might still be enough to make it more visible in the search results. So it's always a matter of what content we have available and what we can show in the search results. And sometimes you would see those kind of changes. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think is particularly visible when there's very little content for a specific topic. Then you might search for, I don't know, this combination of three or four words which are specific to a very small niche. And if we only have, let's say, five really good pieces of content for that query, but we have 20 kind of spammy, keyword jumbly pages for that those same words, then suddenly you start seeing those spammy, keyword jumbly pages in the search results as well, just because we don't have a lot of other good content to show. And the same thing can happen across different languages, where if we have, I don't know, five pages that are very relevant in your language that we can show, but we have 100 pages in a different language that are a little bit less relevant that we can show, then maybe suddenly those 100 pages are also visible in the search results.
OK, so it means that expansion works here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's something where you would usually notice this when you do things like keyword research. You try those queries out, and you see it's like, is there a lot of content already for this language or this keyword? And based on that, that also gives you an idea of like where the opportunities are, where you can jump in and say, well, there's not a lot of stuff here in this language at the moment. So if I put something out there, even if it's not the best, then I have a very good chance of being very visible for that query. It doesn't mean that lots of people will search for that, but at least you would be visible when they do search.
And the same applies to countries also.
Sure. Yeah.
OK. John, one more question I had. It is about some experience that I have had recently. So the relevant page from the website was ranking earlier, but my blog started ranking for the main query. And it is stable, in fact, in Google search. However, the context in both pages is different. So one page is my transactional page. The other page is informative page. And many times I have seen that whenever Google has any algorithm update or we come across the news that some update happened, then respective page starts appearing. It may appear for one day, and then again it goes away. And we know that the page is good. There is no technical issue. Nothing is happening. And I personally don't like unnecessary changes to be made on the page just for the sake of ranking. Again, recently we saw this when I think there was some update, recent update, page ranking update, page experience up, ranking mm-hmm. update. But it again just goes away. And because of this, we know that we are losing a lot of leads and a lot of revenue also. But still, I am skeptical to make any change on the page because everything is OK. The page is well connected. Crawling is fine. So what should we assume when with some update, the page starts appearing, but again, it just goes away?
Yeah. I think that's just a part of search. I think you kind of have to deal with it. Essentially, what is probably happening is that our systems are unsure of the intent of the individual queries, like informational or transactional, like you mentioned. And it can happen that it shifts from one into the other. I don't think that would be tied to anything like a core update or anything like that, but rather it's like it can just happen over time that our systems are unsure with regards to is someone looking for information about a product or are they looking to buy the product. And then it can happen that we shift between those two different kind of intents and then show different pages. What I would do on your side is just to make sure that the two versions of your pages that you have are cross-linked enough so that if someone comes to your informational page with the intent to buy the product, that it's very easy for them to actually reach the product. Something like, I don't know, in the banner or a very clear call to action, for example, on the informational page. And the same thing on your product page where you say, well, if you first want to find out more information, we have a big article about this product or about these types of products here to really guide users between those two versions. Because it's something where you can't control how our system should interpret a specific query that is made by the user, whether it should be transactional or informational or anything else. So you always need to assume that there's a possibility that Google assumes something from the query that is not what I think the user is actually wanting. And it might also be that your assumption is wrong and Google's assumption is correct. But the more you can make it so that it's easy for users to kind of transition between those different intents, the easier you can make it so that regardless of which of these pages are shown, people can find their way to kind of what they were looking for as quickly as possible. That's similar to how you might do that with international websites, where if you can recognize that a user is coming from France, but they're going to the, I don't know, Indian version of a page or a different country version of a page, then showing a banner on top and saying, like, hey, it looks like you're coming from France. Here's our French version of this page. That like whatever you can do to make it easier for people to get to the actual version they want, the more like you can make it so that they can actually convert well. So not just visible in search and getting traffic, but also the conversion part.
Thank you, John. So in this case, feedback link at the bottom does not make any sense or does not do.
Yeah, I think like cross-linking for SEO is one side. So like on the footer or something like that, that helps us to understand these pages belong together. But you have to assume that users also go to those pages and have a different intent. And for users, you want something very visible, something that is easy for them to find and easy for them to act on.
Yeah, I agree. This is for my pages. But I'm talking about Google search feedback at the bottom, where we just try to give the feedback saying that this is not the correct page.
Yeah, I think that's useful, but it's not the case that anyone manually goes through all of those reports and says, oh, this query is slightly different kind of thing. So usually what we do is we classify all of those reports because we get like tons of them. But I don't know. I looked into them at some point in the past, and it's just like so many thousands every day. And we classify them, and then we say, oh, it's like, I don't know, like 5% of the reports were saying that they were reaching the wrong type of page. And then based on that, our engineers will try to improve our algorithms for understanding the intent of a query. But it's not the case that they will look at individual queries and say, oh, for this one, we should tweak the dial a little bit differently.
OK. Thank you, John.
Sure. OK, let me take a break here with regards to the recording. I'll still be around. Lots of people still have their hands raised. So looks like a long day. But thank you all for joining in. Thanks for submitting so many questions. And if you're watching this recording, feel free to drop in one of the future Office Hour Hangouts. And we can take a look at that then. All right, so let me pause the recording.